Welcome to my talk on SSH, Beginner's Guide to Secure Socket Handlers. My name is Chris Finlay, I'm the webmaster for the Linux Society and UK Asian Society. I help facilitate communication with everybody in the community and hope it all goes well. You can contact me on asmdi@gmail, chrisfinlay@gmail, or asmdi@twitter and identical or whatever else like that. So what we're going to talk about today, what we're going to learn today, well, hopefully, I want you to learn what SSH is. You know, what some of the basic commands are, how easy it is going to be able to use it in both day-to-day life and as well as in possibly some of your jobs, I suppose, and things like that. Allows you to transfer files more securely in a manner that's going to help you do what you need to do. And how to notice that Wi-Fi hotspots and places like that aren't actually really secure, and SSH can help you to make that secure. So, say, why do you want to know this? As I say, Wi-Fi hotspots. When you connect to a Wi-Fi hotspot, you're connecting to everybody there can see where you're going, what sites you're going to, stuff like that, by stuffing your connection, stuff like that. Whereas if you use SSH, you can connect to another machine through an encrypted tunnel and secure your connection that way, make it less easy for people to see what you're doing. You know, you don't want people stealing your bank account details or something. If you're transferring files, like for example, egg.com started sending files across the internet to other customer details and bank details and everything, and plain text files. Anybody could just stop along, read the files, no problem at all. And they were quite hammered for that. With SSH, the whole connection would be encrypted and you wouldn't be able to see the values and stuff. But it also allows you to connect to your computer from anywhere remotely you can get an internet connection, which can be very handy to retrieve files, control your computer, download your TV series, whatever you want. So, as I say, start off with what SSH is. A little bit when ports were opened, and what it's used for, what it replaced, and some basic uses and commands. So basically, what is SSH? Let's say it's Secure Socket Handler, which is a network protocol. So it's not one application; it's like a set of applications, and it uses a cryptography, a public key pair, so that you have to provide your key, the public key, to and have the private key yourself, so that you can connect to servers and things securely. It can be used to transfer files using the SCP or secure copy, and all this is done through a secure socket on usually port 22, which is different. Like your emails, like usually SMTP is like port 25. HTTP is like port 80 and things like that. Although it is recommended that you change that port in the configuration file to something less obscure. So what went by when ports were opened? SSH was initially developed in 1985 by a guy at Helsinki University. They were having problems with people stealing passwords, trying to steal passwords and breaking into their system and things like that. And the tools they were using just weren't up to the grade, you know. If they were going to try and secure these tools and make them more secure, they basically have to rewrite them all entirely. And that's just not helpful, it's not tight, it's too time consuming and it costs a lot of money. So this guy, Helsinki University, invented, you know, rewrote SSH using a lot of open source tools that were already available, released by the under the GNU and the GPL license. And later on, a few years beyond that, they started revising the code and moving on. But the guy started his own company, making improvements and stuff to SSH, and made it proprietary. So you couldn't get the code, you couldn't get the source code, you couldn't do anything with it. And of course, a lot of people were like, no, well, that's not good enough. We want an open source version. We want an open source code. So they went back to the, in 1998, FreeBSD went back and said, right, where's the original code that's open source? Because it was under the general public license, which means they can't take it back and say, no, this is proprietary. They've got to have that code and it's got to be available. So they took that code, improved on it, revised it a bit more, and released it as OpenSSH, which is now probably the most commonly used form of SSH. There are more other proprietary versions and versions for Microsoft, Mac, which I think Mac uses OpenSSH as well. I think there's WinSSH for Windows. And
you can get an OpenSSH port as well.
Is there an OpenSSH port as well? Is that under SideG-Win?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, cool. And of course, that version was ported from FreeBSD to different operating systems like Linux, just predominantly using Linux and Unix systems. And that's Flow. Basically, when you log into a system with SSH, it can be done with a command line, or you can use a GUI tool or something like that to do some applications. So as I say, we'll talk about what it was used for before, won't we? So, I mean, there's lots of different things you can use the SSH toolset and protocols for, including logging in remote hosts, as we talked about, which replaced the programs called the we used before were called Telnet and rlogin. But I say these didn't have the security required. But you can also securely execute one command. So you've got a program that's running on another machine, and you just want to restart that program or without actually doing anything else. You can just send that single command to restart it and not bother about whether it's done or not and leave to do it. SCP is quite a good one, very good one. I mean, for copying files and directories and everything, you're copying it to a remote host with an SCP connection. You're going to have more constant connection because it's not less likely to drop. It's encrypted, so no one's going to monitor what you're sending across these networks, as we said before. There is an alternative to that, which is SFTP, which is a protocol that came out after that. It's still part of the SSH suite of tools, but not all FTP servers support it. So, but it will fall back to using SCP if it's not supported. So it's got the redundancy there as well. You can use it in combination with lots of other programs. For like, rsync is a program that synchronizes files between systems. It checks the files match the dates, times, and things, the same files, and copies them across. And you can set it to only copy files that have changed. So it's great for backing stuff up. So you can just use a secure connection, connect to the server, and transfer those files back to your backup files and systems. One of the things that I tend to use a lot most myself is what we call port forwarding or tunneling. Basically, this is what we would use to protect you from a Wi-Fi hotspot. You create a tunnel to your computer or a computer you've got access to on, say, port 80 out to your internet, and then you can access any page or any website or anything that you can access from your home computer. Mainly because it downloads the data to your computer and then sends that data back to you through the tunnel. No one can monitor that tunnel, so they don't know what pages you're going to, they don't know what servers you're going to, or anything like that. Say, like, for example, in university, you tried to go to, one of the game sites, like GameSpot or something, and you tried to get there, and the university says, no, that's a game site, you're not getting there, blocked. But if you tunnel out to your own machine, you can go to that page as much as you want. They don't even know you're there. Another thing that's mainly more Unix systems and Linux systems is the ability to forward X11, which is your Windows system. So you can say, right, I want to run Firefox, but I like the version that I've got on my desktop with my bookmarks. I've not copied the bookmarks to my laptop. You can use a tunnel SSH to the machine you're in with a special option X forward and run Firefox, and instead it'll run it from your machine on your desktop, in your laptop you're sitting at. So the whole application just loads up as if you were sitting at your desktop. It might be slightly slower, but it's there, it's got all your bookmarks, and when you try to access files and stuff, it'll access files on your own server, not the files on your local system. Of course, you can use it with SOX protocols and stuff as a proxy and forward all your web access and everything through that, through your tunnel and secure connection that way. One of my favourite uses for it is Crow SSHFS, which takes a remote file system on a remote computer and mounts it as if it was a hard drive in your own machine. You just give it a location. This is where you want to mount it, this is how you do it, and it mounts it as if you were sitting there locally. You can copy stuff to it, modify files, and then as if you were at that machine there on your local system. And of course, it's still all encrypted. Of course, you can monitor systems with it as well by logging into the system and running the monitoring scripts and things that way. So as I said earlier on, we replaced some programs. That was the whole point in inventing the protocol. So our login was usually used to log into remote systems, the Unix systems and things like that. But it was just sending plain text passwords across the network to log into the system, which isn't any use. Telnet is still used today, but mainly as a backup to something like SSH or SCP, something like that. Like if something like a router or something like that goes down and you can't get to the web page interface, you can usually telnet into it and use it that way, and you get a terminal just as you do with SSH or something like that. But it tends to be only used in small doses these days. And Arceus I haven't seen used in a long time. Whether people still use it on Unix systems, I don't know. It's very much the same as the R-Log and Telnet. They're all very much pretty much the same thing. So as I said, we're going to discuss some of the basic commands. Most of these are run from the command line. There are GUI apps that will allow you to use these as well. The basic commands, you've got SSH, space, the IP address or the host name of the server you want to connect to, -l and your username that on the system you're connecting to. If it's the same username, then you don't need to provide that. You can just try that, and that'll give you a basic shell window where you're on the other system and you can access it and do anything you can in that shell for that machine. You want to specify a port, so you change the port from 22, which was at default, and it's just another -p at the end of the line, and specify the port number that you've changed it to. We talked about X forwarding. We're running up the program from run from your own machine, and to do that, it's just as simple as adding a -X to the front of the command, and that'll forward any application you try to run on another system will run. Any GUI application will run on your system as if you were there. And of course, the single remote command is just pretty much as easy as follows. The same command, you've got your SSH, your remote IP for your remote address, you log in your username or your -p or your port, and the command you want to run. And it'll just run that command and then come back to your own command line again. Oops. as I said, there's another a few other programs within that suite of protocol. SCP is, let's say, a secure copy to copy your files across from one system to another through this encrypted connection. The main reason people tend to use it is, to be honest, FTP is a little clunky, it's a little slow, a bit like HTTP. It's not quite what you want to be doing. FTP quite often drops a lot more. SCP tends to seem a bit more stable. But it's just a very simple command again. The SCP space, the file you'll actually want to transfer, the remote server's IP address, a colon, the two dots above each other, and the directory or you want to place it in the other file. And of course your dash L username or dash P for your ports or whatever. And I say that'll just copy that file over to the other system. And it'll be your result of time like that. You can also perform it the other direction by swapping the two values around. So instead of connecting the remote server and semicolon location, you use the other way around. You just pull it instead of pushing it to the all I said, these tools are tending, majority of the time, a lot of people use them in the command line and so just for quickness of ease. But there are graphical applications for that, for people that don't have, they don't really want to use the command line. One of those is GFTP. It's open source, it's available everywhere, and it's just a great little program. It does FTP, lots of different protocols, but one of the protocols it will do is SSH. And it just log in like you would in any other FTP program, put in your host name, put in your IP address or your host for the connection you're going to make, put in the port, your username and password, and click the drop down box and change to SSH. And then click connect, and it'll come up as if you would do in any other FTP program and list all your files. And you just copy across anything you want. Quick, easy, anyone can do it. See, some more advanced stuff with SSHFS and things. The commands are still pretty simple. Your SSHFS, your remote server, its location, and the location you want to store it at. As I say, we've got an example there. 192.168.1.4 storage, and that's mounted in my folder in the local system, media storage. So I just got that folder and act as if it was the same drive on my desktop or wherever it was. And it's sitting right there in front of me, dead easy to use. Shiztunnels kind of look a bit more complicated. You've got the command is SSH, the one we used earlier to connect the system and get a login and a little command line. This time we specify the ports we want. So you type SSH, the port you want to forward from, the local host, which is the machine you're actually on, and then the port you want to forward to. These can be different, they don't have to be the same. Then list the remote server you want to connect to, for example, 192.168.1.2 or something. You can add your dash L for username or dash P for your port if you want. And this creates, it'll appear and it'll disappear. And what it's created is it created a connection. And all you do is you point your browser to the proxy, SOX5 proxy, and point it to that port on your local machine. And it'll fire that connection right through to the remote machine. And you can see your web pages and pull your data back. Which is what we would use to, let's say, secure your Wi-Fi system on a Wi-Fi network. So that's basically SSH. There's more that you can do, and there's more tools to help you do that and things. If you want more information, please don't hesitate to contact me. Is there any questions?
Not a question as such, but use X forwarding cross platform, so you could forward a Linux app that's on your Ubuntu server.
Yeah.
And you could forward it to Windows, but you have to have.
You need an X server on the Windows desktop though, something like what's it called again?
I think it's called, I'm sure.
X-Men, yeah, that's one. There's two or three open source variations. X-Men is one of them. You can also use SideGWin and install X onto that. SideGWin's like basically taking a lot of Windows tool, a lot of the Linux tools and stuff, put them all together into you've got a terminal, SSH, stuff like that, and you can install X, you can install KDE, GNOME, whatever you want on a Windows system. And one of the things you can do is you can forward to the X system from that as well. There are proprietary versions out there, but we're not going to talk about them.
If you mounted Filism over SSH, do you just use a standard unmount command to unmount it? Or do you
need you need to use a special one. You need to use a fuser mount command. It's fuser mount dash u slash media storage, as you would have it. But I mean, one of the great things, I don't know if anyone's discussed this, one of the great things I always thought about Linux in general, if you've got a command you're going to use and you can't remember what the switch is or what the button is or what the command name is for something, if you type man space and the name of the command, you'll get a small document man page, and the man that just lists the basic usage, basic commands and short description. It's not something we tend to talk about a lot, but we really should. Anybody have any questions? No? Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.